Coming up on New York Now, we head to Saratoga to talk with the new head of the New York Racing Association.
With the casinos upstate, the foot traffic should be good. I believe they have the ability to open OTBs there, so you'll have racing content alongside sports content. Mm-hmm. And that's really opening up a larger demo.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. School's out for summer, and Mary Ellen Elia is about to be out as State Education Commissioner.
That leads our look at headlines. A surprise this week in the State Education Department as Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia announced she would be stepping down come August 31st. Elia replaced John King in 2015 when he joined the Obama administration. She is credited for helping to calm a tumultuous time when controversy over the Common Core standards seemed to make the news on a weekly basis. She explained her decision to leave to reporters in Albany.
As 4 years, that actually is a pretty long time for commissioners in states. And I think there's been quite a few commissioners here in New York who've had shorter tenures than that. I have an opportunity as well to be moving forward and doing some of the work that I'm doing here with a national firm with a focus on supporting districts in their efforts to turn around schools and help those schools to be successful. So that will come about. There'll be announcements on that after I'm out of the commissioner's position at the end of August. But this is a time when I think it seems like this is a change is coming. As you know, we talked this morning for almost an hour in the full board discussion on where we are with our graduation diploma requirements. That's a major effort. I think this is a good time for someone to come in and be selected by the regents to take that move forward.
State Ed has announced that Beth Berlin, Ilya's deputy, will serve as the acting commissioner starting September 1st. In other news, the governor had two bill signing ceremonies this week. On Wednesday, farm workers in the state received greater protections. The Bill of Rights legislation includes disability pay and paid family leave coverage, at least 24 consecutive hours of rest each week, and overtime pay.
This is a powerful, practical achievement, even more significant in the era of President Trump, who continually diminishes workers' rights, who continually attacks labor unions, disrespects the disenfranchised, and has made divide and conquer rather than unify and grow the credo of America.
On hand for the ceremony was the governor's ex-wife, Carrie Kennedy, a longtime champion of the cause. On Thursday, Andrew Cuomo was joined by former Vice President Al Gore as he signed the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act.
If indeed New York State does become, and you've got this great vision, Governor, of not just the transition to clean, renewable energy, but also making New York State the construction and jobs hub for this fast-growing new industry of the future. This is really fantastic.
A part of the legislation sets a goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 85% by the year 2050. The governor also announced the selection of two offshore wind projects that the administration says will create enough energy to power over 1 million homes in New York City and Long Island.
New York is continuing the celebration of the Erie Canal bicentennial.
And finally, last week marked the first public meeting this summer on the state-sponsored Reimagine the Canals initiative, a discussion on how to best utilize the Erie Canal system going forward.
You got a 10-minute video on the canal, and you never mentioned boats.
Okay, we'll have that.
You got a graphic up there. Where's the boat? Where on there is a boat? You don't have any damn boats.
In Schenectady, around 100 people came out to the local community college where they watched a presentation and then broke off into groups where they shared ideas and expressed points of concern about any future plans. The co-chair of this Mohawk Valley Task Force is former DEC Commissioner Joe Martens.
It's going into its third century now, and its use and utility has changed over time, and it's obviously changed dramatically now that there's virtually no commercial traffic on the canal anymore. So we know it's about recreation. We know it has environmental attributes. We know, for example, particularly here in the Mohawk Valley, that flooding is a big issue, and the Mohawk and the canal system have a role in that. So it's to help sort of tease out all of these parts and figure out how we maximize the value of the Erie Canal going forward into the 21st century.
The task force will take the best ideas from these public meetings and present recommendations to the governor by the end of the year. There's more to recap and analyze from the week's news, and we'll do just that at our Reporters Roundtable with my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler.
All right, and now for some analysis of the week's news, I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Anna Grunewald, education reporter for Politico, and David Lombardo from my own paper, The Times Union. All right, Anna, we just saw footage from Mary Ellen Elia's farewell. What's her legacy going to be at the Education Department?
I think what she expressed and a number of people in the education community expressed was that she came in at a very difficult time for the department. It was the height of the opt-out movement. There are thousands of people across the state were not taking the state exams. And she continually said that this was a very stressful time and she wanted to calm the waters. She went in and did a listening tour, and I think a number of people said she was very successful in that because she really sat down with numerous stakeholders and listened to their concerns.
What do you think the regents, who of course are elected by the legislature voting as a whole, which means that Assembly Democrats, because of their numerical majority, kind of hold the whip hand in that selection process, are going to be looking for in her successor?
You know, it's interesting. After about 4 years, this is a very different Board of Regents than the one that she was appointed under, that was under Chancellor Merrill Tisch. And I think that they are looking for someone who will kind of push forward some of the more progressive policies that they said they're interested in. Even at this last meeting, they said that they are considering different pathways to graduation that could include eliminating the Regents exams, which are a stalwart of the New York education system. And so I think that they're looking for someone to really guide the department into a different and maybe even more progressive, following the newly elected legislature, a more progressive system of education.
It was a sudden departure. I think it's fair to say that a lot of people who were in the meeting, whether it was reporters or even maybe some members of the Regents, thought that were very kind of taken aback by it. Did it emerge as your reporting or people you speak to have suggested that there might have been tension, or that she was perhaps just burnt out, ready to go after about 4 years?
You know, I think it's a little bit column A, a little column B.
Right.
It was a surprise because it was the last minutes of the meeting. People were packing up and she said, here's my resignation letter. But I think a number of people said, hey, it's been 4 years. She has this national opportunity that it sounds like something she's really excited about. There's also been a little bit in the past few Regents meetings, a little bit of tension between the board and the commissioner as they're trying to change things and appease people who oppose the state system of testing. And she says, hey, we have to continue testing. It's required for federal accountability. And I think some miscommunications there, and also some different diverging ideas about where the board should take that have caused a little bit of tension, and I think that that's a hard place for her to be in. Yeah.
Dave, this was also the week that politicians had to file their campaign, their six-month reports, yep, with the Board of Elections, and Governor Andrew Cuomo, despite the closure of the LLC loophole,
still able to raise some money.
Still doing pretty well.
Yeah, you know, he's still the big fundraiser for New York. He brought in about $4.5 million. 90% about of what he raised in the same period 4 years ago, but it's just more money than anyone else has had when it was ever run against him. So he heads into the 2022 for that fourth campaign looking like he's going to have a lot of money on hand again.
$8.4 million currently,
yep,
in his account. One thing I thought was interesting was that his campaign, when they put out the top line numbers, boasted of the fact that 50%, half its donations came from people who gave $250
or less.
Now, If I give $5 to the governor and you give $25,000 to the governor,
that's half.
50% of the donations are $5
checks out, Casey.
Or less.
What's your problem?
No problem.
And there also is the issue of some donors, these small donors giving multiple times, including person giving 16 times. Not as bad as we saw the last time they tried to do this math. But
when one poor guy was giving a dollar, I believe, or like
$10. 69 cents or something?
Yeah, right. A very, very small amount over and over and over
dozens
again.
Dozens of times, yeah. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, it matters maybe on local levels to showing how much support you have. But for the governor, it's that top line number of 8.4 million that matters, what he has in the bank.
But that shows, I think, that he is kind of alert to kind of the progressive moment and the idea that he wants
well,
to
he is
make
the most
it
progressive
seem as if he has
of anyone in the state.
Support.
So, yeah.
Yes.
Finger on the pulse.
Turning, of course, to the battleground for next year, which is going to be, once again, the state Senate.
Right.
Senate Dems are doing okay.
Senate Dems find that, you know, being in the majority has certain perks, like they are the big fundraiser. Traditionally, the Republicans, while they've controlled the chamber, have been able to rake it in, and Senate Democrats have been, you know, begging for money. Definitely the reverse now, to the point where the Republican Assembly Campaign Committee, the perennial, you know, redheaded stepchild of politics in Albany, has more money in the bank than the Senate Republicans, and that's not a great sign when they need to take back 9 seats to try to win control of the Senate.
Also this week, welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends, which is the ongoing battle sniping between Governor Cuomo and Bill de Blasio, this time in response to the last weekend's Saturday blackout in Midtown Manhattan. The city seemed to get through it pretty well after a couple of hours. De Blasio was interviewed on, I believe, CNN, and he was in Iowa, of course, campaigning for the presidency, and he said, no, I'm not coming back, that's okay. And that prompted the New York Post to call for his ouster, specifically for the good of the city. Governor Andrew Cuomo needs to remove the mayor from office.
Which is something he can do.
Yes, he can remove elected officials from office.
Well, I mean, it creates the perfect opportunity for Cuomo, who would probably have been there anyway. At this point, I don't think he really even needed to brag about it because the visuals were so telling.
Them things never change. They're just more fun, new ways to present this dynamic.
The governor loves to, as our friend Jimmy Vilkind puts it, present himself as governor of action.
Yes.
And so the governor did an interview on WAMC where he said, no, I'm not going to remove Mayor de Blasio from office again. So good stuff. All right. Thanks very much to Anna Grunwald from Politico for coming in. Good analysis. And Dave, you this week spoke with David O'Rourke, the president and CEO of the New York Racing Association.
Yeah, we talked about sort of the future of NYRA under his, you know, leadership after taking over earlier this year from Chris Kay, the president and CEO, who left very abruptly amidst allegations that he was misusing NYRA resources.
Thanks for taking refuge with me here at the Times Union's gazebo on this hot and humid day at the Saratoga Racecourse.
And thanks for having me. You got a roof, so.
Well, it's better than not having a roof. That is true. You know, now that you are in this leadership role, what do you hope is your trademark for your leadership at NYRA?
Well, in terms of racing, we're going into the next generation. We're pushing television. That's something I've been working on for years.
Okay.
Here, it was my primary focus before I got into this role was on content distribution, wagering, and media. And with our Fox shows, I think we're setting kind of a new standard in terms of racing as a more general sport.
And so that's hoping to reach an audience besides the serious gambler, theoretically?
Yeah, as sports betting is starting to proliferate, we think this is a nice platform for us to engage that broader market.
Okay. Anything else in terms of the tracks themselves that you hope to leave as a legacy?
Well, legacy is not so much, there's a lot of people involved, it's
gotcha.
Not just me.
You're the man on top, though.
Yeah, I am.
Successes are yours, the failures are
yours. That's true, yeah. Actually, it's better to attribute the success to the team and take the failure.
Gotcha.
But, we have 1863, which is the first new major investment up here in decades. And we think it came out beautiful. It fits with the rest of the facility. And then down in Belmont, with the Islanders coming, we're working on plans for how do we modernize that facility. So it's the amenities are brought up to a more contemporary level.
And there's a lot of work potentially going on at Belmont.
Yes.
When is that going to break ground? And what does that mean in terms of opportunities and challenges for NYRA?
We believe it'll break ground the next month,
okay.
Probably right at the end of July, beginning of August. And for the next 2 years, it'll be a little bit of a logistical challenge. So we might be at Aqueduct a little bit more than we normally would. But in terms of the utilization of the property, and there's a new train station coming there,
mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be great. It's a
the best possible thing for that facility.
So you took over after President and CEO Chris Kay had to leave in scandal, and his predecessor also left in scandal. Is there anything about Naira that creates this potential problem on the top, or can you avoid whatever it was that brought them down?
So I might be on a three-year timeline.
Well, Charlie Hayward lasted longer.
That's true, he did. I think in racing, there's so many different factors that, you really have to have a strong team around you. You're dealing with wagering, with a live event, with equine athletes. There's a lot of factors. So I really rely heavily on the experience of my team, which is very deep, which I've inherited, and I think we'll be fine.
And it seems like there have been some recent staffing changes on the top, and it sounds like you're trying to, craft the leadership team.
Streamline a little bit, yeah.
Okay.
I think we wanted to streamline front-side sports venue operations under Gordon Lavalette. In terms of the racing facilities, the tracks and the buildings, mm-hmm. Glenn Kozak's been in this business basically his entire life. Martin Panzer runs the racing program. And, I think we've got a good team now.
So what effect, if any, will this summer's introduction of sports gambling at upstate casinos have on Naira's bottom line? And how important is it that, moving forward, Naira's included in any future expansions of sports gambling, including online?
We'd love to participate, and there's different ways. Mm-hmm. There's one in the actual activity of taking the bets. So with the casinos upstate, the foot traffic should be good. I believe they have the ability to open OTBs there, so you'll have racing content alongside sports content, mm-hmm. and that's really opening up a larger demo for
us.
We're
seeing that in Schenectady already.
Yeah, so it's really setting the stage for, in the future, racing is, we're a content provider. So we're sports wagering content. So while it would be nice to have a brick and mortar business or even a mobile business where you can offer sports betting, the real goal for us is to have our content on these platforms sitting in, for lack of a better way of putting it, the busiest store. And it would have the ability to access other demos. Because up until this point, online, we've been going after sports, horse racing customers. It's a niche product. But if you look at these sports betting platforms, it's a much broader demo where we could potentially cross-sell into. And that's where the TV kind of flows into with Fox.
And so as New York's gambling landscape continues to evolve, whether it's the introduction of new casinos downstate or new tax rates for the existing casinos, is that kind of where you see Naira fitting into that landscape?
Oh, I think we would make a very good brick and mortar location.
Okay.
In terms of whether it's an affiliate, as we saw in the last proposed bill, or if we were granted a license, I think that would be very good for us. It would complement what we do. But in terms of sports betting or horse racing as content provided to sports betting platforms, I think that's where the largest opportunity for racing as an industry lies.
And moving forward, there's a study that the state's commission that's supposed to look at the entire picture of New York's gambling. And one of the things it talks about is sort of the support payments that New York Racing gets through for purses, the payments that also go to breeders. How important is it that those payments continue so that there is a thriving racing industry in New York?
It's very important for our economic structure, but I think it's a good idea for New York in terms of that RFP. We'll give a comprehensive study because what happens over time with as gambling products are introduced into a marketplace, it kind of layers on top of each other. So I think a comprehensive study is probably the best thing to do at this point in time.
So we've seen a lot of high-profile horse fatalities out in California, and I'm wondering if there's anything that's prompted unique actions in New York based on those deaths. Has there been any sort of response, or is that a unique incident that's not connected with the tracks that you oversee?
Well, back in 2012, 2013, we had an independent panel really review everything that we do and offer us policies and procedures and safety protocols that we implemented. And we think it was actually the best approach where management was not involved in actually assessing the entire situation, but were involved in implementing. And those policies and procedures evolve over time, but that's coming from the experts. So I think in terms of New York and our record, we're at the forefront, and we'll continue to do what is defined as the best policies and procedures, but we're not going to adjust anything unless it's something coming from an expert.
So it sounds like you're saying that the California experience doesn't really
differs from what here, yeah. Well, at least the approach to resolving it.
And, you know, despite that, and despite, you know, what New York has done to try to make horse racing safer, you know, there still are fatalities on a pretty regular basis in terms of horses dying. I don't know when people say regular, but horses do die on tracks and do die during training. Is that just an inevitable consequence of the sport, or is there ever a time when those might be completely preventable?
I think getting the number to zero is not realistic.
Okay.
But I think creating the safest environment possible is our goal, and that's pretty much the commitment and culture that this organization is built around.
We talked a little bit about Belmont, and you said there might be more racing at Aqueduct as a result of work being done there. Aqueduct's always kind of seen as the, you know, the runt of the litter of the two the three tracks. What's the long-term future of Aqueduct? You know, there's been investments in Belmont, investments in Saratoga, not so much at the Aqueduct track. I mean, is that place where you see NYRA having a long-term future, or maybe not?
In the near to midterm, it's our winterized facility.
Right.
As we develop long-term plans for Belmont, we'd have to assess the economic viability of moving winter racing there. But these are decisions that would be made over the next few years. So nothing in the near term. I mean, the tracks at Aqueduct have all been redone. So they're actually our newest racing surfaces. So it's a great place to race. But in terms of commitment to the long term at Aqueduct, it's a great question, but not one we can answer quite yet.
And at Saratoga, we're doing an interview right now on a Wednesday following a two-day dark days, a unique experience here where we, traditionally it was 6 days of racing. The five-day-a-week meet, is this something you think is working? I know we don't have much time to judge it by. And do you think this is something that could be in Saratoga's long-term future?
It's a great time to test it with the construction going on. Once we get into August, we'll get a better feel for it. And we can monitor the numbers inside our gates, but what we're going to do after the meet is come back up, sit down with the local businesses and see how it impacted the restaurants, the hotels. And that'll allow us to make a comprehensive decision for the long run.
And while the meet itself is still 40 days, stretched out over a longer period, is that something you think could be revisited, maybe more than 40 days going forward, or are you pretty happy with that number?
Yeah, I don't think we'd be adding any more days. It's more of the, how does the five-day week impact? We get the extra weekend. So theoretically, it should be good for tourism. Work-life balance. Jockeys get an extra day off, which is good. So there's been no discussion on extending the meet past 40 days. It's more of 5 days versus six, what works better in totality.
And lastly, Governor Cuomo hasn't come up here yet under his tenure. He was asked about his, you know, relationship with the race course earlier this week, said he's not, you know, necessarily a fan of racing. Does that matter so much as him being a fan and coming here, or do you feel like he's been a good steward of racing under his watch?
I think he's been an excellent steward. I think we're in the position that we're in right now because of many of the things that were done under that administration in terms of safety protocols that we have that are leading the nation. So, you know, I definitely think that we've benefited from what has been done in New York's government under their watch.
But still safe to say, if you wanted to come here for Travers, you wouldn't turn him away.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Well, Dave, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me, seeking, you know, refuge away from this rain, which seems to be lighting up. But so thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
This week's New York Now poll question asks, how likely are you to place a sports bet at an upstate casino as of this week? It is now legal. Let us know what you think at nynow.org.
How might the Children's Administration do to sort of prepare our standing on the international stage?
So after I Clorox the Oval Office, the next thing I'm going to do is restore our leadership on the world stage.
Last week's feature story focused on Senator Kirsten Gillibrand's struggling presidential campaign, and we asked if you thought she would make a good president, and the majority of our voters said no. Tess in Utica, watching on WCNY, said, I wish Senator Gillibrand great success and wonder when can I put her campaign sign on my lawn. Pauline in Queens, watching on WNET, sounds like she will not be asking for a campaign sign. Gillibrand is a typical politician who cares only about herself and will say anything to get elected or reelected. And finally, Bob in Queensbury told us, I don't think we need a political opportunist of her level any more than we need a borderless society. Our thanks to everyone who voted. To do so this week, just head to nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on social media, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. There's a link to the Capital Confidential blog as well, a must-read. It's also available at timesunion.com.
Here, the understory has been completely changed. They put down straw and all of this grass. There's no grass in the forest. There's no grass up here. But all of this grass has been allowed to grow because they've completely changed this forest corridor into a long grassy strip. They've poked holes in the canopy, which allows the sun to come in. So it's a fundamental change of the forest character.
Stay tuned for next week's show, where we'll look at a big temporary win for environmental advocates in the effort to prevent the state from further cutting trees in the forest preserve in an effort to create connecting trails for snowmobiles. That's next week here on New York Now.
Well, we're all out of time. We leave you with footage of the high peaks in the Adirondacks. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
In case you're wondering, Casey, it is still black fly season.
I'm still jealous you got to go.
I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.